Hi, everyone. I'm Natasha Chen, filling in for Coy today. I'm so grateful to be back with all of you for another exciting day of CNN 10. Coy will be back tomorrow. We're going to continue with our coverage of the conflict in Israel and Gaza. The current situation can feel very confusing at times, and the conflict dates back many decades. Reminder that we have a full explainer of what's going on in Israel and Gaza from our show on Monday, but for now, here's the latest news. At the time we recorded our show, at least 1,200 people had been killed in Israel, and up to 150 hostages are believed to be held in Gaza. In a speech on Tuesday, President Biden called the Hamas attack an act of sheer evil and confirmed 14 Americans were killed, with others being held captive. Israel is also hammering Gaza with airstrikes, hitting hundreds of targets, reducing neighborhoods to rubble and killing at least 1,055 people, according to Palestinian officials. A humanitarian crisis is swiftly unfolding in Gaza, with hundreds of thousands displaced and many cut off from food and electricity. Next, we'll hear from CNN's John Sarlin, who will detail why Hamas's most recent attack is considered unprecedented by many.
The scale of this, the brutality, is truly unprecedented.
Completely unprecedented attack.
This is completely unprecedented here.
The conflict between Israel and the Palestinians is not new. In fact, it's been going on since before Israel's founding in 1948. So why is Hamas's latest attack on Israel so unprecedented? First, the surprise of the attack. On October 7th, Hamas launched a barrage of rockets towards Israel while gunmen entered Israel from Gaza. Israel has not seen this kind of infiltration of military bases, towns, and kibbutzim in its 75-year history. The country is known for having one of the world's most impressive armed forces, a premier intelligence agency, and sophisticated border security, but this attack seemed to catch them off guard. Second, the intensity of the attack. Israel Defense Forces have said that more than 5,000 rockets have been launched from the Gaza Strip since October 7th. To put that into context, in 2021, during the 11-day war with Hamas, some 4,300 rockets were fired. Following Saturday's attack, Israel has formally declared war on Hamas, the first such declaration in 50 years, setting the stage for a major military operation in Gaza. Israeli forces are battling militants in southern Israel and have been pounding Gaza with airstrikes. By the conflict's third day, over 900 people were killed in Israel, while authorities in Gaza said over 680 people have been killed in the Palestinian enclave. Lastly, the hostage situation. Hamas says it is holding more than 100 hostages in Gaza. The group claims that this includes high-ranking army officers, but it also includes women, the elderly, and children. Hamas says the hostages are now being held in locations across Gaza, which could complicate Israel's response to the militant group's deadly attack.
10-second trivia. What is Africa's largest river by volume? Nile, Chobe, Congo, or Volta? Though the Nile River is much longer, the Congo River holds Africa's record for amount of water flowing through it. The Kasai River in Angola is Africa's second largest river by volume and flows directly into the largest, which we just mentioned, the Congo, supplying tens of millions of people with fresh water. But until recent years, huge portions of it had never been documented by science. As part of Rolex's Perpetual Planet Initiative, explorer Steve Boyce has embarked on a series of expeditions to discover and protect these river systems and the wildlife that depends on them.
The eastern portion of the Angolan Highlands Water Tower was previously known as the Terra do Fim do Mundo, the land at the end of the earth by the first Portuguese explorers. It was the farthest place from anywhere, and it is. All we have is satellite imagery to look at and try and prepare ourselves for what we're going to do that day. But we're the first people to document these river systems. And when I say document, we are establishing early 21st century river baselines, ecological and hydrological baselines. I'm Dr. Steve Boyce. I'm a National Geographic explorer and the project leader of the Great Spine of Africa series of expeditions. I've never wanted to be anything else other than an explorer and a conservationist. I gave up writing my master's dissertation, and for the next decade, my entire world was the Okavango Delta. I couldn't think of anything else. I never wanted to leave. So I went to all the universities in the states around the world to advocate for the Okavango Delta to become a World Heritage Site, UNESCO. And that happened, but within 3 months, we were in Angola. I kind of broken out of that it has to become a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and we went up to the sources. We were the first group to do so. We were told by all of the top scientists, geologists, hydrologists, that these were seasonally flooded wetlands. And when we get there, we find an ancient, crystal clear, acidic source lake. We see that it's surrounded and sustained by peatlands. Now, none of this is known to science. We crossed the entire Okavango River Basin, all the way into the Kalahari Desert, beyond the Okavango Delta, followed the water to its end, exploring this entire water tower structure. Now, a water tower in this context is not a wooden structure on top of a building in New York. It is a high altitude, forested watershed, high rainfall, with high water storage capacity due to peatlands. It's like a giant sponge. Now, that sponge is sustained by forests protecting water or creating rainfall, receiving rainfall, and flushing it down into the peatlands that hold that water for thousands of years. We've always wondered why Africa has the megafauna, why it has these great grand wildernesses, these great migrations. And it's because of these water towers. Africa's managed to weather these climatic oscillations that have happened naturally in the past through this water storage capacity that naturally exists in these high altitude sources. So these water towers are keystone to our future. They're unexplored, unsurveyed, scientifically misunderstood most of the time. And that is what we're urgently chasing after on the Great Spine of Africa series of expeditions. This starts with exploration, discovery, and science. We need to understand the flows of these rivers. We need to understand the importance of and nature of those sources. And then we work with local people who are already our guides through all of our expeditions to protect those landscapes into the future. This new center of endemism is emerging, a large-scale water tower that wasn't known, peatlands that weren't known, source lakes that weren't known, are being documented for the first time in the 21st century. This is early 21st century exploration in reality.
Up next, we're talking squash. Not the vegetable, but the sport. The Los Angeles Olympic and Paralympic Committee is proposing to add 5 new sports in the 2028 Games, including baseball, softball, cricket, lacrosse, flag football, and squash. If approved, squash and flag football would make their Olympic debut. Now, flag football, you may know, is a non-contact version of American football, which replaces tackling with defensive players removing the flag of the ball carrier and has been growing in popularity over the years. The proposal to include these 5 sports into the 2028 Los Angeles Games will be reviewed by the Olympic Committee's executive board in Mumbai, India on October 16th. So a lot could change before the Olympics in the next 5 years. The last time the Olympics were held in the United States was in 2002 when Salt Lake City, Utah hosted the Winter Games. We'll keep you updated on all things Olympics headed into the 2024 and 2028 Games. And for today's 10 out of 10, we're giving you pumpkin to talk about. Travis Ginger of Anoka, Minnesota won the 50th World Championship Pumpkin Weigh-Off in Half Moon Bay, California with an enormous orange pumpkin that caused quite the hullabaloo. The gorgeous gourd weighed a whopping 2,749 pounds and appears to have set the world record for biggest gourd. Ginger grows his gourds in the pumpkin patch in his backyard, and he calls this one Michael Jordan. Go big or gourd home. And now on to my favorite part of the day. I want to give a special shout out to Mrs. Hare's 7th grade class at Discovery Charter School in San Jose, California. We see you, and we hope you and everyone watching around the world has a wonderful day. I'm Natasha Chen, and it's been a pleasure being here with you these last couple of days.